The tragic events of October 1st, 2017 in Las Vegas have faded from the headlines and Twitter timelines in recent months. But the story of the worst mass shooting in modern American history that left 58 people dead, including five with ties to Kern County, didn't end with the death of murderer Stephen Paddock. In fact, when the sun rose on the morning of October 2nd in Las Vegas, it was just the beginning of another story. Journalist Amanda Fortini writes in a new piece for the California Sunday Magazine. She's a visiting journalism professor at UNLV, and she joins us now. Amanda, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Las Vegas, of course, is a city created on the tourism industry, and critical to that is to managing an image. How did the city respond from a marketing perspective? You start out your piece examining this concept that emerged very quickly called Vegas Strong. Tell me how the city responded in that regard right after the shooting.
Right. So, you know, within minutes of the shooting, the crisis management team for the Las Vegas Convention Authority, the LVCVA, was, you know, they had put the word out to their crisis management team and to their entire, actually, you know, kind of marketing team. R&R Partners is their advertising group that works for them. And they were already meeting, you know, within 20 minutes or so. By 11 o'clock that night, they had all convened to meet. And actually, Vegas Strong was something that they didn't invent, but that was, you know, spontaneously cropping up on social media. And they decided, okay, this is a slogan that we're going to go with. They, you know, by 1 a.m. that night, they had talking points. By dawn, they had put out a memo to all their tourism partners. They responded incredibly quickly. And by, you know, I think Wednesday, I say it in the piece, they had a television spot ready. So, the response was truly immediate. It was within minutes of the shooting, and as the chaos was still going on, you know, as people were still going to hospitals, I say in the piece, the sort of PR doctors were doing their job.
Now, certainly people bought into that campaign on social media. As you mentioned, it originated there. But there were also critics of the Vegas Strong hashtag and movement out there, among them your students. Tell me about that.
Right. So, you know, I've interviewed so many people for this story, and the response to the Vegas Strong hashtag was really twofold. Many survivors that I interviewed, I should say, found it comforting, found it meaningful. A lot of people I interviewed had tattooed Vegas Strong on their bodies or were wearing bracelets that would say Vegas Strong. But I did hear from many, many people, including my students. I met with, I was teaching a seminar, you know, a couple of days after the shooting, and my students were in there. I think it was actually, I canceled my classes for the days after the shooting, but the week after we were sitting in seminar, and they were saying, you know, we just feel that we weren't allowed to grieve, that it was so quick, the pivot to strength. And they were saying, what about Vegas, you know, angry or Vegas sad or Vegas depressed? And over the coming months, I would hear that from, you know, a pretty vocal contingent of people who felt like it was a little bit quick, a little bit glib, and that it didn't sort of allow for the full range of emotions that people feel after such a tragedy happens.
There have been many cases where Las Vegas has been criticized for cheap commercialism. Is this one of them?
I don't know that I would call this cheap commercialism. I mean, I really think that, you know, if they were making cars, they would have to go back to making cars. It's their industry, you know, tourism. And so I actually think that the response was pretty tasteful. I mean, maybe it was a little quick. There was merchandise made the next day. I can see, I do see the criticism. I sort of can empathize with the people who criticize that. Yes, it was a little fast, but I don't know that I would call it crass or cheap, really.
Again, we're talking with journalist Amanda Fortini, who has a new piece in the California Sunday Magazine about the aftermath of the Las Vegas shooting and looking at it from a lot of different perspectives. One that I had not thought of and is really interesting is this issue of makeshift memorials that popped up and mm-hmm. how the city dealt with those. Tell me about how that began and how the city responded.
Well, so we've seen these makeshift, I mean, across the country, you know, we're seeing these makeshift memorials whenever a tragedy like this occurs. I actually reported on Aurora in 2012, and they're the same kind of thing where people go to either the site of the crime or somewhere nearby and leave teddy bears and candles and cards and handwritten posters and, you know, all kinds of kind of memorabilia or ephemera. And we saw a massive response like this here in Vegas at the Welcome to Las Vegas sign. And a man from Illinois also brought, 58 crosses, and those were placed there. So around each victim's cross, there were sort of individually specific, memorabilia or, sort of little tchotchkes and things. And then around the Welcome to Las Vegas sign, there was, like I say in the piece, a snowdrift of things. And then, but what happens is that, these seem like sort of, like I said, ephemera, but they actually have a great amount of meaning. Like, these are, totems of mourning for people. So it's not just sort of like a dime store teddy bear or just, a Hallmark card. People are leaving these from their heart, and they're intended for individual victims, and they mean something to the families, and they mean something to the people who leave them. So then the question becomes, what do we do with them? Because they do have such significant sentimental value. And they also, if you want to think about it historically or anthropologically, at some point they might have, historical value when someone wants to look back and say, how did people grieve in 2018, when we were having, unfortunately, a rash of mass shootings in America? And so museums are tasked with, how do we archive these things? How do we save these things? What do we do? And actually, a curator, Pamela Schwartz, who is in Orlando and has worked on the Pulse Nightclub Memorial, she has sort of taken it upon herself to write a manual and to call all of the, whenever there is a mass shooting, because unfortunately we're having so many, she calls the curator of the local museum and says, look, this is what you're going to be tasked with. This is what you're going to face. You need to think about how you want to deal with it. What do you want to save? What do you want to, archive? What do you want to get rid of? Because she said sometimes museums, they're small and communities are small and they don't have the resources to sort of save and archive everything like they're doing in Las Vegas. So they might choose to save a few things that are symbolic of everything that was left. It's really interesting, actually. It's a sort of modern problem that we haven't really seen before.
You also write about another modern problem, or at least maybe a solution to one, and that's this class that has been springing up and has now been received well throughout the community. It's called Stop the Bleed. Tell me about how it was first received in Las Vegas and now the aftermath after the shooting.
So it's a national campaign, and one of the trauma surgeons here at University Medical Center, Dr. Douglas Frazier, he heard about it at a national conference and brought it back to Vegas. And before the shooting, he said he tried to get various casinos and hotels and nightclubs interested in it, and they didn't really get many takers. But after the shooting, he told me that they've gotten quite a few, and they've trained people at MGM, at Hakkasan Nightclub, many different other, major establishments here in the city, schools, nursing homes, churches. They've trained like 4,500 people. And what the class does, I should say, so that the listeners know, is that it teaches people to civilians, who without medical training, to tie tourniquets and how to pack wounds, so that if you are faced with someone with a gunshot wound or a major laceration, like from people had from climbing fences and things, how to staunch the bleeding or stop the bleed, which is what the campaign is called, until help gets there. And so I call it a kind of, in the piece, a grim pragmatism in the face of, lack of tighter gun control. Like, we're not going to get tighter gun laws, so we're going to teach civilians to know what to do in another situation like this. And I went and got trained myself. I actually took the class.
You've seen this play out over the last few months in Las Vegas, of course, such an industry town. How has the overall entertainment, tourism, gambling industry fared since October?
I think, I haven't looked at the most recent statistics, but when I was looking at the sort of quarterly in January, and I think they should, I don't know if they have new numbers out yet, actually, but when I looked at the year end, they did have a slight downturn, which they attribute, the convention authority of the industry attributes not only to the shooting, but to, fewer rooms being available or whatever. But I do think that the shooting had an impact on, the numbers show it, on tourism here. But when you go down to the strip, you don't really feel that. It doesn't feel like things have changed. It did feel there was a different air to things in the first week. But after that, it felt like, you know, it always feels. And I've spent a lot of time on this trip.
Before we go, there's so much about the shooting that remains unknown, specifically the motive behind gunman Stephen Paddock. You write that Las Vegas is a hotbed for conspiracy theories overall. Mm-hmm. What is the mood like in the city right now, just with the unresolved nature of this story?
What is the mood like? Well, I think that people are starting to feel, I feel like the balloon is starting to, has been punctured a little bit in terms of the conspiracy theories, because in the last month, the Metro, LVMPD, the Las Vegas Metro Police Department, has started to finally, after being ordered by a Nevada Supreme Court to release documents and evidence. You know, we've had witness reports, we've had officer reports, we've had a little bit of footage from two of the first officers to breach the room. So I think people are finally feeling like we're getting some information. But, you know, there's a lot that feels unresolved to people, I think, especially because there's no motive, especially because we have not yet seen the footage of the first person to breach the room. You know, there's just a lot that remains unknown, and you know, hopefully in the coming weeks and months we'll get more information. And I think especially the survivors that I've spoken to, that provides a degree of closure for them to have some of this information.
You mentioned that you covered Aurora. We often hear about these tragic mass shootings and how it forever changes a community. Is Las Vegas forever changed by this, and if so, how?
You know, I think that the sort of interesting. I think the jury's still out on that. You know, I do think it forever change. I guess I would say it does forever change a community, because something like this, a trauma like this, a tragedy like this, it affects the individuals in the community. You know, I mean, people are healing, but it takes time, and it really does reverberate throughout the community in many ways. It's just what I tried to show in the piece, a kind of prismatic look at all the different ways that people who were there and weren't there are affected, and try to help, and, you know, try to look toward the future about how to memorialize this. How, you know, it will change Las Vegas has sort of yet to be seen. I don't know quite how to quantify it, I guess. But I'm here watching, and I'll write more once I know.
You can read Amanda Fortini's piece, What Happened in Vegas, the days, weeks, and months after the worst mass shooting in modern American history, in the new edition of the California Sunday magazine, online at californiasunday.com. Amanda Fortini is a visiting journalism professor at UNLV, and she joined us today on Valley Edition. Amanda, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.